This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
What a try to begin the season for the Chicago Bears.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Touchdown!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
He's J.J. McCarthy.
Today's guests, two-time Super Bowl champion and Greenlight podcast host, Chris Long, comedian Bert Kreischer, plus latest news and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Now that 1 week in the National Football League season and 2 weeks in the college football season, essentially, are in the books. Lots to talk about. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Whether you're watching us on Disney Plus, on the ESPN, the app, and if you are, you'll see me wearing a crisp light blue shirt. Or a royal blue shirt that might be one button too unbuttoned. Not going to lie.
You know, I got to say, when I walked in this morning, I noticed that. And yeah. I'm like, oh, that's whoa. Little, but, you know, I think it looks great.
Yeah. I'm just going with
I promise how I feel. You he doesn't think that, Rich.
And I'm just describing I'm just describing the word picture. If you're listening on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance or listening on Sirius XM Channel 80, I guess that Howard Stern lit up the Sirius XM world yesterday by making it seem like he was quitting, and then he didn't.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Andy.
Andy Cohen.
Yeah. He was all like shook. Like, yeah, I know. I'm here. Right? I know you're wondering why I'm here.
And then surprise, he was just pranking everybody. Yeah. Yeah, I love Howard. Growing up in New York, my goodness. I listened to him on WNBC.
WNBC.
We got Chris Long joining us in the middle of this hour, the Greenlight pod. The Greenlight with Chris Long podcast host is joining us, and I love chatting football with him. He makes me smarter, and he comes at it from a point of view. He's won two Super Bowl rings. You know, he's a football legacy, for crying out loud. Yep. Top pick in the draft, or second overall.
Second.
Yep. My gosh, he just knows it and talks it in a way that few do, and I love having him on. He's about to join us. Bert Kreischer is going to join us in studio in hour three. Let's hope not.
Are we going?
844-204-RICH being the number to dial on the program. The San Francisco 49ers have some considerable injury issues. We knew George Kittle hurt his hamstring. That's usually a 4 to 6 week or... Well, I'm reading like 3 to 5 weeks, which is just an odd way of putting it. Is that the optimistic side of 4 to 6 weeks?
I don't know, man.
What
this
a bummer!
Is such a bummer,
it
dude.
Is because it's just I love watching him play football.
And
he plays it with such
dominating.
I know
against Seattle,
he plays it with such an enthusiasm that just leaps through the television set, and he's one of our favorites. I mean, I know I say that a lot. We have a lot of favorites.
Yeah. We are people.
Yeah,
we are.
Yeah, we're like the human fund, you know, of sports programming.
The human.
And so Brock Purdy, though, came out with a toe injury that might keep him out of the game this week.
Shoulder and toe. He's dealing with two ailments.
Well, apparently the toe is worse than the shoulder. And, you know, I mention all the time whenever I see a toe injury, that's what caused Deion to quit playing the game. Yeah. It wasn't anything else. It was his toe. That he eventually, as you know, had to get surgery to handle by, you know, removing it.
Didn't Jack Lambert also have turf toe? Isn't that?
It's nasty. I don't know if that's what it is. There's a toe injury. They're at New Orleans in week two. So Mac Jones might be the first backup quarterback to play. Unless Adam, our call screener, gets what he wants him to be Tyson Bagent for the Bears. So there's that. Is he all right back there?
I feel like I should take
a phone call just to see if he's okay.
He wants to call in physically from the back.
We'll get him. Yeah. We'll get him. And then the Niners made a move that I think fans have been wanting for quite some time. Kyle Shanahan has had enough of Jake Moody. I guess one Michigan guy succeeds and the other guy has to leave. Jake Moody, a day after J.J. McCarthy just took care of business for the Vikings, he's been cut.
Moody?
That's it. They've had enough of him. So... Highly drafted, Jake Moody.
He has to do is stay ready. That fell in the ring.
Dude is one of the best field goal kickers I've ever seen Michigan have, and he just couldn't kick straight.
So the Niners already with injury issues where Brandon Ayuk's not coming back for a while, and apparently Juwan Jennings is better than we thought. So that's good news there. Right.
Good news there.
But it could be Mac Jones versus Spencer Rattler week two in the dome.
Mac Jones.
Who thought would be possible? And again, but thankfully McCaffrey looked like McCaffrey.
Workhorse.
And Robert Saleh being back just means so much for this team.
Huge.
And if they could string some wins together, they've got a last place schedule, and the 49ers can be the team that everybody thinks they can be, which is back in the Super Bowl conversation. They just have to get healthy and fast. Because after that game in New Orleans, they've got some division games. Laugh all you want. Arizona's beating them up there, and Arizona can beat them. That's a possibility, 100%.
Agree.
They have to come here on a short week for the Rams, and they're at Tampa, which has the one-weekend offensive rookie of the year, right? Emeka Ibuka's the on the pole position, just 1/18th of the season in. So the Niners got some terrible injury news, and then they just booted their kicker. They just booted Moody. And but Juwan Jennings apparently is okay, and they got the win. If they didn't get that win, that'd be this is now a we're talking about something a little more dire. So, meanwhile, we love it when Jerry Jones talks, don't you? What do you think, Chris? Do you love it when Jerry Jones talks?
It's aces, okay, top notch.
Mike, you love it when Jerry Jones talks.
It's marvelous
because you have so many drops from all the years. These are all the drops that you have from his weekly Tuesday appearance on 105.3 The Fan in the Metroplex.
10, 11, 12.
Just play him. Play some hits, Mike.
I mean, it's insane.
It's better.
One of my favorites. The squirrel.
Keep going.
I've eaten a lot of raccoon.
Okay.
Delicious. Seriously.
Okay. What else you got? Well, I mean, that's not him.
I know, but that's what
I want Jerry Jones.
I'm smoking something over there this morning.
Okay.
It takes a nice chunk out of the pie. Settle down just a little bit. Okay. I don't have the patience to jack with you. Get your damn act together.
There is less pie.
Okay. No, that was not from his radio show, but that is, again, we got more Jerry Jones.
I don't know what he's talking about. Dr. Jones with my rubber glove is going to make sure every one of you are safe.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That's it. Stephen A. Smith was just kind of pulling something from the Landman.
Appearance.
I had to throw that one in there.
That was an intermezzo. That was a palate cleanser.
That was totally for TJ. Okay. That's in there.
So, TJ, you don't particularly like it when he talks. But guess what? We're going to find out. We're getting inside the whole Micah Parsons trade situation.
I'm feeling this is going to anger me.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Does it anger you to know that when he was asked how he received the trade request for Micah Parsons services from the Philadelphia Eagles, does it make you upset when he said he didn't even respond to it?
I'm happy to hear that.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So him talking confirmed that. You don't want to hear that, I entertained it.
I went back and forth with Howie Roseman. I didn't hear what he
said. So here we go. Is that how long it is, Mike? We cut 3 minutes of it?
I mean.
Oh, okay. I see.
Oh, we had to go to break.
Yeah, because we got Chris Long coming up, and we want to have time for him.
20 drops out of that.
No. Here we go. So this was his answer. He said that he did not even respond to the Eagles' request.
Good.
And then went on.
The thought all along was to see where the interest level was. And that was very important. And from the get-go, that was an effort on our part to chum up interest. And that's a part of what was going on during those months that we were talking about Micah. And as it would happen, as it always happens, once that interest started really peaking, then you started having that phone ring. And that's exactly what the plan was, to see if that phone would ring and the proposition be there enough to for us to make the move. It was always a case of we understand what kind of player Micah is. He's an outstanding player, great player. He's a great player. But if the principle specifically is with our system the way we have it today, if we can get 4, 5, 6 players for one player, that's better for our opportunity to win the thing. And that's what it was about. And It didn't surprise me. We had others call. The closer we got to the time we traded Micah, the more the phone started ringing.
Good news for you, TJ, is that there's only 3 weeks left in this conversation. Because that's when Micah strolls into the Metroplex on Sunday Night Football in Week 4.
Oh, yeah, because that he'll stop.
No. That'll be a page turn. Then it'll be a page turn. And the next time we hear about Micah and the trade is if Green Bay goes further in the playoffs than Dallas or goes the distance. And then that'll be a very long Super Bowl week for you if they're there in San Francisco. It'll be a very long Super Bowl week for you with Micah at the media night and then throughout the week. And when we get bored on Thursday and Friday, it'll be like, what happened there? Certainly if it's Green Bay and the Ravens, like this guy over there thinks, man, it'll be a long ass week for you because it'll not only be, well, Micah's on Green Bay. And what if the Cowboys did actually take Derrick Henry's phone call when he was a free agent?
Are you trying to like?
No, I'm just giving you. I'm not trying to upset you. I'm just trying to give you a roadmap.
I'm upset now.
No, the good news, it's 3 weeks left. That's it.
It's not three weeks.
And then it'll be a page turn.
Yeah. Okay.
And plus, your Cowboys look better than a lot of people thought.
Yeah, we lost, guys. What are we talking about here?
Okay.
This is neither horseshoes nor grenades, in the words of Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Now, if you can't put pressure on Russell Wilson this week, then again, that'll be the conversation. Certainly, if Green Bay on Thursday night has already, you know, gotten all over Jaden Daniels, who, by the way, is the last quarterback Micah sacked as a Dallas Cowboy. And we'll see if that builds and then builds again when Dallas visits Chicago, which could be winless at the time. And then it'll build, you know, even more after Green Bay in their third week visits Cleveland and could be 3-0 strolling into Dallas. Then it'll build, then it'll quiet down, and then we'll see what happens later on. That's the roadmap in terms of Micah Parsons. But hey, he told Philly to pound sand, eat static, sort of like what Khan told Captain Kirk back in the day. It all goes back to Wrath of Khan for me.
Of course, none of this makes me feel better.
Okay.
And that was Mean Gene.
Micah!
Khan! With the brilliant!
Okay. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Chris Long is going to join us when we come back. All of Week 1 unpacked with one of the best football minds talking about it coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show, everybody. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, is on the air with our live stream, our simulcast with Disney Plus and ESPN, the app you can get everywhere, all things ESPN. I love this guy. A guy hardly needs an introduction, but I'm going to give it to him anyway because he's one of our favorites. He's the host of the Green Light with podcast, Green Light with Chris Long podcast host, two-time Super Bowl champ Chris Long. How are you, Chris?
Hey. I love a good introduction, Rich.
Bro, look at us. Week one, and a sick week one. What a crazy week one. Where were you watching Sunday night? Thinking, what were you thinking? That game, Bills Ravens, Chris.
Crazy. I was sitting right over there preparing for our Monday show.
Right.
With one eye on the fourth quarter of the Bills Ravens game, and I turned to our producer Cowboy Reed and I said, "Hey, in 5 minutes, this game could be electric." And
really?
What
gave you that sense? What the hell gave you that sense that this game could be electric in 5 minutes?
The Ravens doing what they do. I think that, like, that to me is the biggest story coming away from the game. Like, the Bills were down to, you know, basically their third corner with Hairston on IR, and, you know, they're starting a rookie, I think, sixth rounder opposite Benford. And they look small in the run game and all that. And they're down two scores and people are leaving the stadium. But I think, you know, the saying, I said this on my show, that hope is not a strategy. It is a strategy when you play the Ravens, because you can just hope that eventually they're going to make that big mistake. And that's what they did. And credit to Ed Oliver for making that play. But, if you hang around with the Ravens long enough, you can beat them. And I think the thing for the Ravens is, you know, you draft Starks, Jair Alexander comes in. You try to retool that secondary that really was in pretty good shape after week 10 last year. And they continue to lose games where their defense has to defend the 2-minute drill. I mean, and it is the Bills, but they lost games like that against the Browns and the Raiders last year. It's a troubling start to the season for the Ravens, but I think on paper, their roster is as good as anybody, so they'll be fine. It's just that's kind of their reputation at this point.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the way, you know, they've gone out of the playoffs, that it's just something always seems to crop up, whether it's Zay Flowers getting the ball knocked out by the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, in the red zone, it looks like he's going to turn and score. Obviously, what happened, awful stuff that happened with Mark Andrews, you know, last year, it just seems to be, or Deion Dawkins having Chris Jones getting thrown Deion Dawkins into Josh Allen's lap when he has a game go-ahead shot against the Chiefs, and then they wind up kicking a field goal and missing it. Like, it just seems to be stuff that we see from the Bills and the Ravens every year that they can't get past the Chiefs, and now the Ravens can't get past the Bills. In this respect, makes you think what happens to the Ravens when it hits in January. You know what I mean, Chris? It just seems can you fix it? I guess is my long-winded way of just saying, can you fix that for the Ravens and how to it?
Well, you know, you'd like to be sitting where the Ravens are and say, hey, there's nothing on our roster that's going to keep us from playing in the big game. Like, if you look at that roster, you think they're at least, if not the best roster in the NFL, one of them. But this was a game where I thought this is where you get the Bills. Yeah, I had the Bills in the Super Bowl, and I feel like this was the game, considering multiple guys suspended defensively, Joshua Palmer kind of working in offensively, Hairston on short IR. Like, there's all types of reasons that I thought that this matchup would kind of mirror last year, where it was in the first game, the Ravens run all over them. They did that. But the big difference for me was the Bills' offense. This offense is in such a better place than it was when they played the Ravens in the middle of 2024, and they got thumped. Obviously, they added Amari Cooper after that, but that didn't really make all the difference. I think Keon Coleman's come a long way, and he was big for them. You know, also late in the game, Joshua Palmer made some big plays and some really tough downs for Jair Alexander to kind of finish the game. So, you know, if you're the Ravens, you're sitting there thinking, damn, we're not quite where we want to be defensively, if that's the benchmark, playing the Bills offense. And if you're the Bills offense, you're kind of thinking, damn, this is as good as we've looked against a really quality opponent to start the season. The one thing that I think gets lost in the shuffle is they do such a good job protecting, and the Ravens are going to have to bring more pressure in games like that, which is a scary prospect if they can't get home with four.
Chris Long here on the Rich Eisen Show. And the big part about the Bills winning is they not only have a leg up on the rest of the AFC East, I don't think that's any shocker. Everyone
else
lost.
Look out for the Jets.
We'll get to that game in a second. And then they're now one up on the Ravens, and they're one up on the Chiefs as well, after the Chargers beat the Chiefs. And the one thing I want to hit you from that Brazil game, Chris, is the Chris Jones rush at the end, and Justin Herbert taking advantage of the way Chris Jones rushed him. And then Drew Tranquil barking at Chris Jones afterwards, telling him basically, do your job. When you see that, is that something that should set off an alarm with Chiefs fans? No, you're shaking your head. What's your opinion on that?
Not the yelling at each other part. I mean, that's part of being on a great defense. You know, when I got to New England, and, you know, I was a veteran player, had my highs in the league, and you know, I'll never forget, like, Dante Hightower yelling at me for the first time. And I was like, man, after I dusted myself off and I was like, okay, I just have to do that better next time. I was like, I love this younger guy kind of taking charge of the huddle. And I think that's leadership. It's championship DNA. This team has been places before. So, you know, a heated exchange that gets caught on camera is not a big deal. Like, we saw that with Andy Reid and Travis Kelce before, and obviously totally different situations, but this group is fine from that standpoint. The thing that should raise alarms for Chiefs fans is more just the way they're playing defense right now. I think the offense will be better before the end of the year. I think the offensive line will give Patrick more opportunities to make plays downfield than he's had in a couple of years. I think Josh Simmons is going to make a big difference at left tackle. Kingsley's a work in progress at left guard, but I think this is the best pocket that I've seen him throw out of in a couple years, it feels like, just by solidifying the left tackle. I don't want to take anything away from the Chargers. I thought they were fantastic. And, you know, while Rashawn Slater's a big loss, you can see they've gained a lot of ground in this matchup. I think as for the end of the game, Chris Jones is trying to win a rush. I heard people coin it, you know, like a selfish play, that sort of thing. He's trying to win a rush, and part of what he's conditioned to do is be the guy on a defense where they don't have pass rush outside of him. I think that's one of their biggest Achilles heels. He's got to try to win. Now, the situation demands for better rush lanes, not because it's 3rd and 14 with the game on the line. It's because they're in man coverage behind the front. And when you have man coverage behind the front as a front, you need to rush knowing the defensive backs don't have zone eyes on the quarterback and their backs are turned to the rush. If that were cover three or cover six or something like that, you know, you're able to take that inside move. And I would say Dana, who's inside of him, he's in a three technique. You can't heavy up. Your job is to do whatever Chris Jones wants. Mm-hmm. So if Chris Jones takes the up and under, you need to cover him. And you'd like to see somebody bail Chris out, but ultimately it is a no-no against man coverage. I think that's the key when you look at that situation at the end of the game. But I do have concerns about the Chiefs. I mean, I don't think they're a Super Bowl team this year. I could be wrong. That has nothing to do with what I saw on Monday. Monday only confirmed some of the suspicions. And then you get Worthy running into Travis Kelce and losing that deep ball element. Rashee Rice is out. The screen game is going to suffer in the interim. They don't have a lot of cap space to make a move like, say, the Eagles, who went out and get Bigsby and Za'Darius Smith. They're more stuck in their current state.
Mm. So if you had to choose between the Steelers and the Chargers, who have entered the chat for AFC, for the AFC Championship, which one would you choose based off of Week One, Chris Long?
Well, listen, I thought the Rashawn Slater injury was really going to hurt them. I thought they were a playoff team. You know, they played like a playoff team Week One, but I thought the injury might keep them from taking that step forward. I think the Chiefs are a weird barometer because they don't have the horses outside Chris Jones. Mm. Obviously, you have to deal with Spags' pressure. But I do think Justin Herbert is, in his current form, closer to an elite quarterback than Aaron Rodgers, even though Aaron looked really good the other day. And I think the biggest concern coming out of last year with Aaron Rodgers is obviously how does he gel with the Steelers? I thought he would put on a brave face and be the best version of himself in Pittsburgh. They have a program that, you know, that almost precedes him there. And so I thought he'd be on his best behavior, but it's mostly about what he'd look like 2 years off the Achilles. Generally, we think players take 2 years. But I wasn't sure what it would look like on a 42-year-old guy or whatever he is. He looked really good. All the staples of, you know, what makes him a threat were on display. The quick game, you know, you can get the ball on a slant to DK Metcalf and he can go to the house. You know, I saw the back shoulder stuff. They're going to feature Jonnu Smith heavily. I saw he caught like a jet sweep in the red zone. But the troubling thing for me is the run defense is hard to explain. I know the Jets are going to be tough to deal with this year. They're going to be a tough out, but if they can't stop the run, that's going to be a problem. It's a one game, you know, sample size. I think the Chargers, I would lean Chargers because of what I just said about the quarterback out of those two teams. And I also think Minter's done a great job on the defensive side of the football. It's kind of like LaFleur, you know, not LaFleur, Halfley in Green Bay, who I think a lot of people undervalued that defense because maybe they didn't have a bunch of superstars. Now they have Micah Parsons. You can really see what a good job Halfley's done, keeping things in front of them, playing sound defense. I think the Chargers have done a lot of the same stuff. They just don't have the star power. But I get a lot of respect for that football team, especially after seeing them play Monday.
Chris Long, the host of Green Light Pod with Chris Long, two-time Super Bowl champion here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk Packers. You were the first that I saw to mention the Micah Parsons acquisition by Green Bay potentially being bigger in that locker room for them to be able to walk around like they've got a big-time shot to win the Super Bowl thanks to that shot in the arm and the attaboy from the front office by landing Micah Parsons. Did you see that in week one against the Lions? Did you see that, Chris?
Yeah, as somebody who took him in the North and thinks that the Micah trade changes everything, I was really pleased to see what I saw from them. I mean, like, I'll say this. Micah Parsons played 29 snaps. He makes a big difference when he's on the field, obviously. In that matchup alone, you see that you take him in the Penei Sewell matchup. That offensive line has taken a step back. They're replacing or reshuffling three guys on the interior. You've got, obviously, Mahogany having to play a lot of snaps now. Glasgow at center. Ratledge, who's a rookie. And then Decker at left tackle. I was mostly impressed just in the fact that the physicality in this matchup, the balance of power when it comes to playing physical football has shifted a great deal in a calendar year. I think, a lot of people, if you're a Packer hater, when they ship, their stud defensive tackle away, who's been there almost a decade, everybody says, well, they're not going to be able to stop the run anymore. Kenny Clark's in Dallas. I think the interior is ready. And I think when you make a move like that, it's not only a vote of confidence in your team saying, hey, the window is wide open, let's go for it. It's like a signal. It's a public declaration. It's like when the Niners trade for Sky Moore in training camp, that's a declaration that we're in trouble at wide receiver. Or, Jacorian Bennett in Philly, let's get some corner help. That's a declaration that we don't feel great. When you trade for a star like that and you give up two firsts, albeit low first round picks, which makes the deal a little bit easier to stomach, you're saying we are ready to win a Super Bowl. Let's take a stab at it. I thought everybody around Micah Parsons, with him on the field or not with him on the field, was a lot better. Lucas Van Ness had probably his best game as a pro. Rashawn Gary's going to get a lot less slide now. He's going to be able to run through people's inside shoulders. I thought the guys inside played great. Cooper is a stud at backer. Quay Walker played faster. Evan Williams is a hell of a player. They really are sneakily one of the best defenses in the league. And I think we got a little confirmation bias for all these years of watching the Packers in recent memory, not being able to stop anybody. In the first half of the year, they're kind of getting their bearings in that defense. The second half of the year, remember, they were like they walked around like a top 10 defense. And when they played the Eagles in the playoffs, one of those scores in a relatively low scoring ball game for the Eagles was the result of a special teams mishap right off the bat in that game. So the Packers are coming into this season, and I feel like a lot of people are overlooking them, and then they make the trade for Micah Parsons. It really unlocks everything for them. So I think the thing that we're not talking about is Jordan Love, and we should be talking about Jordan Love. There's a reason some people get on ESPN and say, hey, whose league is it in 5 years? And it's an open-ended question. I hear people say Jordan Love. There's only a few people, but they're not saying it for effect. They're not saying it to get absolutely slaughtered in their mentions. They believe it. Jordan Love in league circles is believed to be an elite talent quarterback who, if he can take the next step, is going to be one that we're going to be watching make a lot of big plays. And I think if he can play more like the guy in 23 than 24, they've got it going this year. I think the 24 Jordan Love was injured, and I don't think he ever got his feet under him. They dropped a lot of footballs on that side of the ball. So I think Jordan Love and the Packers are really dangerous, and probably after 1 week look like the most talented team top to bottom in the NFC North, and maybe one of the most talented teams in the NFC. I would put them up there with the Eagles and the Bucks. I throw the Bucks in there as well. I think the Bucks are fantastic.
We'll get to the Bucks in a second. By the way,
the Commanders.
Yeah, we could throw the Rams in there as well, perhaps.
Rams, Stafford's healthy,
right,
fantastic.
Right. Chris Long here on the Rich Eisen Show. Confirmation bias. I love that. By the way, if I had a racehorse or a cover band, that might be the name.
Confirmation bias.
Down the stretch, they come here. It's confirmation bias. But because it's real. It's real in our profession. Yeah. No question about it. And certainly week one games, we are all hunting and pecking to see if narratives we've been talking about for months have shown up with an actual game. And I'm wondering if the Lions missing their coordinators showed up. Like, did we see that, or is it something different?
I think it showed up, but I think, like, as they're making a scheme adjustment, I think Ben Johnson would have a hard time making this adjustment. I think all of a sudden the offensive line looks really human. Mm-hmm. And that was such a a strength for them. Like the Eagles offensive line has never looked human. Not since I've been there. Like they always look like the Monstars. And they're coached by one of the best coaches in the league. Obviously Detroit has Hank Fraley, who's a hell of a coach as well. You know, I'm talking about Stout in Philly, but that interior three was so valuable to them. And, you know, the way they kind of reset the line of scrimmage, they kind of set the line of scrimmage in that pocket. So that Jared Goff, who's not the most mobile guy, doesn't feel that pressure up the middle. And, you know, at times I've screwed this up where I've said, hey, Jared Goff isn't great against pressure. Statistically, he's probably very good against pressure, but he's not great off platform. And, you know, when I say versus pressure, I'm talking about the pressure that moves Jared Goff off his platform. And right now he's making an adjustment to a new look in the pocket. Like all of a sudden the guards are in his lap. You know, and the Packers played really well in the middle. But at times, like even in the run game, they were backed up at on the goal line after taking a sack, and they let the tackle run free and almost pick up a safety. I mean, like they're having a hard time up front right now. It's early. I'm not saying they can't figure it out. But what you see when they get in these long, you know, third and longer situations, the tackles are really good in pass pro, but they're not elite. Like I don't want to sound crazy. Like Penei Sewell is one of the best tackles in the league, but the situation that Philly has, and this is what frustrates me at times when people compare those two offensive lines, Philly has two all world tackles. So when you get in these third and longer situations, cause you can't run the ball as much, you looked at like 21 of their runs, like 15 of them got hit in the backfield. That's a crazy stat when you think about a Detroit offense. So I want to give Morton some time. And I think Dan Campbell's a hell of a football coach. It is a privilege to have to replace two of your coordinators. That means things are going well. This is something if Detroit and Brad Holmes and Dan are going to be there a long time, which I think they will, they're going to have to do this again at some point. So I would like to give them time. I think the offensive line, the interior three really matters. There were times in the game when Jared was just dumping the ball when there was no pressure because he was sped up. And Green Bay changes the picture in the secondary. So that's an extra layer of processing for Jared Goff.
So I got a couple more left for you before I send you on with your Tuesday, Chris Long. The Bucs have entered the Super Bowl contender chat. You really believe it? For real? Yeah?
Oh, for sure. I put them on a very short list. I mean, you know, when you do the preseason thing, you're throwing darts.
Right.
Super Bowl matchups. I haven't got one right since I've been in the league. And I'm nails in the playoffs, so I need to look at it before I really do it. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know that.
I'll admit that. Like, so.
Oh, yeah.
So if I pick your team to go to the Super Bowl, you almost don't want that. But I did put the Bucs in the Super Bowl this year before the season started because I just think they quietly got so much better. Not only that, they've kind of owned the matchup with Philly, which pains me to say, but like, you know, historically, recent history, they've owned that matchup. They got a lot better on defense. I think, again, confirmation bias. We look at the Bucs last year, not a big market team, and we see them, you know, on red zone, or we catch little snippets of them. The Falcons score like 100 points in two games against them. A lot of it's because they had injuries. And you think about the quarterback of your defense, Antoine Winfield, who's fantastic, missing much of the year. He might as well not play. Like when you're injured that long in a season, you're never going to be yourself. Savassier Dennis, they didn't really have a pass rusher opposite Yaya Diaby. I think Kancey and Vea are fantastic inside. And they add Hassan Reddick, who had a big sack in the red zone. It's a 4-point sack alone on Sunday. That's his first big play as a Buck. I think that the key, though, is Todd Bowles was giddy this offseason talking about the two-man corners that they were able to draft in Morrison and Parrish, and Parrish playing in the slot. And Parrish made a big play knocking them out of field goal range on Sunday. Morrison didn't even play. So they have depth now. They also are like, yeah, we've got a bunch of great receivers, but we didn't have all of them last year. Let's go draft this Abuka guy who scored two touchdowns for him on Sunday.
Yeah, did you hear what Mike Evans had to say, basically, and Baker, that he called a shot and that they're both raving about how beyond his years he already is.
Yeah,
you know?
They love him. They love him. And again, like Tampa's one of those true programs. Jason Light does a fantastic job. And so I think they've just really, like last year, they were closer than people thought, but they weren't healthy. And then this offseason, they filled a lot of the holes. And obviously the big question is going to be the offensive coordinator, Grizzard. But Baker's had about 12 of them in his career, and it's never slowed him down. He looked a little rusty Sunday, and he would tell you that. But I think for a team that didn't play their best ball, left some points on the board, didn't see Otten when he was, you know, butt naked in the secondary, didn't connect, could have gone up two scores late, missed kicking game stuff. Like, they still beat Atlanta, who probably got better this year. Didn't probably get better. They definitely got better. Defense got better. I think Penix gives you more upside at quarterback. So that's got to feel like a good thing to go on the road, either down 7-0. They're almost down 14-3 at one point. They make a big stop on 4th-and-1. I thought it was a big win for them, and I think they'll be right there at the end of the season.
All right, Len, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about the Monday nighter before I let you go. Your opinion of what you saw. Obviously, the first 15 scripted from Ben Johnson made everybody feel like this thing was now finally had fairy dust sprinkled all over Soldier Field. And then, you know, and then there was a struggle after that. And then J.J. McCarthy could not have looked more lost. First half, and then he throws a pick six, and then boom, all of a sudden, the national champion quarterback that I know and love showed up. What's your opinion of the Monday nighter moving forward?
Well, Chris, two sides to it. I mean, there's the Chicago side of it, and you mentioned it, the script. I mean, a Ben Johnson script. He's had, you know, months to come up with this script, and the city of Chicago, the top almost blows off. They're like, oh, we've got our guy. You know, we're finally the guy that's going to pull the sword from the stone here when it comes to quarterbacks. And I do think they have that guy physically. You know, you look at the dart that he threw to Adunze in the, it might even be the picture there in the red zone on that first possession. It was like, oh my God.
Right.
You know, like, and the way he gets out of trouble.
Yeah. He's fast. He's good.
Seems to see the field differently than other people, but everything. And I know there's this article out by Tyler Dunn, and I am trapped behind the paywall. So I read like the intro to the article, and I was like, oh my God, that is rough. Like the things they're recounting from last year. And I haven't even gotten the article yet. I'm behind the paywall. So like if the stuff behind the paywall is even worse, then they are really digging themselves out of a hole. But I think what he shows you is he's got it in his body. Ben Johnson's a hell of a coordinator. And on the other side of it, I think with J.J. McCarthy, it's kind of like he's the guy that seems to be really trying to do everything right. He's not supremely talented, but that was what we saw coming out of his college tape. And he's in a place where playing quarterback is probably easier than anywhere in the league when they're at full strength because of their coach. I think O'Connell's awesome. I mean, you talk about getting Josh Dobbs ready to play, coming straight from the airport, teaching him the freaking snap count on the sideline. You know, like going through the playbook in real time. He has coached up quarterbacks and a lot of different ones into playing competent football, and I think he's confident. I mean, think about them making the move to let Sam Darnold go and saying, hey, this is our guy. They have to believe in this guy. And I love the way he settled in. Like, what a story being a Chicago hometown kid and finding himself down 17-6 and nothing's going right. He throws a pick six in his hometown. Like, all the negative thoughts that probably entered his head, he was able to push those aside. The Vikings were able to run the football, and he hit some big throws. A little red zone scissors. That's my favorite play in Madden. to Aaron Jones to kind of shock Chicago. I mean, it was like, and then they got the ball and they didn't give it back.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think all this stuff that you're worried about with Caleb Williams shows up. Evidently in the article, they're talking about, you know, the snap count, pre-snap motion, like issues, you know, learning that stuff, or an unwillingness to do things other people's way. I take all that with a grain of salt, but I did see a lot of pre-snap issues, you know, a lot of false starts, a lot of motion issues, and things like, hey, you know, the intentional grounding, got to be smarter there. Ended up in some third and very longs in the second half, missed some easy throws. He'll make the throws that you're like, oh my God. And then he'll miss some of the more easy
DJ
throws.
Moore one. Yeah. DJ Moore was wide open, you know, heading towards the pylon, and that would have been a big connection right there. So, bro, you're the best, dude. Thanks for the time. As always, I'm going to take you any minute that you say, let's do it again. You know that.
Okay, I'll be back. I'll be back soon.
So
I appreciate y'all.
Who's on your pod real quick? What do you got for me this week? Let's promo Greenlight Pod.
Dude,
what do you got?
Perfect. It's perfect. I got Big Cat.
Nice.
And I booked him like 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
and then the Bears game happened.
I look forward to that conversation. That should be great.
That'll be out tomorrow. So
awesome. Chris, you are the best. Thanks for the time, brother.
I appreciate y'all.
Chris Long, everybody. Green Light with Chris Long Pod. Get it wherever you get your pods. All right, let's beat it on down to break. 844-204 for Rich, number to dial. Bert Kreischer making his way to our set momentarily.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Get renter's insurance to protect the things that make your place a home, including coverage for theft or damage. Visit progressive.com. We're on ESPN 1050 in New York City. I wonder if that's how Dave in Brooklyn, New York, is taking us in. What's up, Dave?
Well, Rich, welcome to the wonderful world of Disney. So excited that I could sit on my couch and watch you and listen to you on ESPN Radio.
We're happy to be had.
And I, the one thing I will say, and I don't want to scare TJ about this. I know I shared Instagram comments with Brockman and TJ about it, but is he more scared about the future of the Cowboys or O's the Mentalist again at the Super Bowl?
What are you more concerned about, the Cowboys' future or O's the Mentalist coming back?
Well, I know the Cowboys won't be in the Super Bowl, so there's nothing for me.
All right, Dave, what else is on the checklist?
Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about was I think that the loss by the Jets on Sunday was actually more beneficial than a win. It keeps the Jets fans kind of on an even keel to see what we have. Justin Fields looked really smart and making good decisions, like running the ball, throwing it when he needed to. You saw the fire and Aaron Glenn actually pulling Sauce Gardner away from the refs.
But why not win, too? Why not win, too, Dave?
I want to win. I want to win. But the goals there were you saw where you needed to fix. The losses that we had with, and the injuries we've had so many times. I know you as a suffering Jet fan feel this way too.
But Dave, like the Eagles, the Eagles got the win. They know what they can fix. You know, the Vikings have a heck of a lot to fix. Clearly, from the first three quarters, they got the win. Listen, I'll just put it this way, Dave. That kid Justin Fields played his head off against a Steelers defense that is definitely, you know, Mike Tomlin speaking to the media today says we got to fix the run defense. How many times have you heard in the last year and a half a team play the Jets and then the head coach comes away saying, we got to fix the run defense? Not many times, right?
Never.
When Breece Hall isn't blowing out his ACL while running for 300 yards in a game. You know what I mean? So at least there's that. And you just hope, again, that the Aaron that's being listened to is the HC putting his own stamp on it, which is exactly how you want to build a franchise for 10, 15 years of success, not with a guy saying, please do it for us at age 40. So he can at least win something before you shuffle off your football mortal coil. And bottom line is, they should have won this football game. Unfortunately, somebody kicked a 60-yard field goal on him, and they made enough mistakes for that to stick. Thanks for the call, Dave. Appreciate being on, obviously, ESPN Radio Coast to Coast and being able to see it on Disney Plus. But honestly, you're 0-1, and the Bills are coming in. Mm-hmm. Feeling great, by the way. They've got lots of things to fix, don't they, the Bills?
Yeah.
But they won.
Yeah.
You'd rather be fixing things 1-0 than fixing things 0-1. Bills are coming in, and then after that, you know, do you want to be 0-2, starting with your first two at home? Absolutely not.
No.
Then you're at Tampa?
Phew.
I mean, you think Todd Bowles wants to? He'll never say it out loud, but deep down, you think he wants to leave a mark on the Jets? Before they visit Miami on a Monday night, which now is officially a winnable game based on what you're talking about with the Miami Dolphins. Home for Dallas, baby.
Oh.
And then I'll call this game in Denver. But hey, man, Justin Fields looked the part that they were hoping he would look like against a tough defense that is now licking their run defense wounds.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.